Well, thank you. I don't have as many surveys as what the other speakers have had, and now I'm going to continue on from what George talked about with regard to the education there. Most of my talk will come from interactions with Alan Knapp and Dan Doble. Dan is with Pioneer and Alan is at Iowa State. So we'll go into some of the concerns that was covered in some of the first part there. The world population has reached 7 billion people, going to be up to 9 billion by 2050. As much food will be needed to be produced in the next 50 years as been produced in the last 10,000 years, and this production is going to be on less land, and with global warming and climatic changes, water resources are all going to have a part on that. What are some of the issues? These are some of the issues that Vern suggested I cover. Concerns about declining number of agronomy and crop management students at the MS and PhD level. Issues with regard to the capacity to teach and train and mentor these graduate students, and the private sector needs for MS and PhDs. Who is going to be preparing this next generation of agronomic scientists, and what are the new skills for research in these particular areas? And then a little bit on what kind of collaboration can be done with the public-private sector to develop these future agronomists. So we'll quickly go through these topics, concerns about declining numbers in agronomy and crop and soil management. Again, I'm going to be covering just the MS and PhD level. And as we've seen from Vern's graph, that the number is decreasing. And some of the reasons for this decrease, agronomy departments are facing major cutbacks. We've seen that in the numbers in one of our earlier speakers. And the reduced numbers of graduate assistants. Again, agronomy is not a classy term for getting additional research grants. And then the other thing is students are finishing up with their bachelor's degree and obtaining very good positions in industry with regard to their expectations. They get that pickup, they get the good job, good salary, they can afford the house and advance there. And then another issue that is coming up that you may not be thinking about is that students are having to go out to pay off that student loan. I don't know if you saw the USA Today. There's an article on the front page about student loan debt surpasses $1 trillion. And so there's a tremendous amount of money that's being tied up by these students in their BS level undergraduate college degree. And I just put in a little bit of information there that I found with regard to using Iowa State as an example, with the average of about $30,000 as the value of that education that they have to pay back. And again, there's a reduction in state financial aid for students attending public institutions. And I'm really not sure if agronomy departments are pushing for graduate students going to advance, because they don't have that assistantship money there to have those students go into a graduate program. What are some of the capacities for universities to teach and train and mentor agronomy students? This is a big question mark. And as I started to look at this, one of the issues is there's just fewer agronomists in land-grant universities. Some of the newer positions that departments are getting are not agronomy positions. They're not extension positions. And so they're having the cutbacks in the extension, not getting the funding that they need for training of graduate students. Current agronomists are aging. As if we look at the group here, many of us have the gray hair, or like myself, no hair. There are just fewer people out there in the agronomy departments to pull in graduate students and do the training there. So the real question is, what do we have there for capacity at universities to train these? Again, talking about field agronomists. A question I also raise is not so much about the students that we have coming into graduate school will need to have may not have that farm background. And how do we get those students in their undergraduate training or through their internships with industry? How do they get that more of that farm interaction, knowing what that farmers is thinking about to be out there on that farm and what some of the issues and problems that farmers is having? What is the need for private sector for MS and PhDs? It's a great opportunity out there in agriculture right now. Growing demand for trained individuals in agriculture. Again, I'm going to use a couple examples from Pioneer. These are not from Pioneer per se information, but information that was in Des Moines Register about what Pioneer is doing on jobs and the future of Pioneer. Again, in the next 5 years, they plan to add about 4,000 new employees. About 500 of those are going to be in Iowa, with a major demand is going to have at least a minimum of a BS level and a majority requiring a master's and PhD. And the question is, where are they going to get those trained people? And that's same for all the companies. If you look here at the conference this past week, you got Monsanto, Pioneer, Dow, Syngenta, all trying to find BS, MS, PhD students for their jobs. And many times you don't think about the USDA. I've talked to people at the USDA. They have approximately about 50 to 60 agronomists, MS and PhD agronomists in their organizations at the present time. There is a critical workforce shortage in agriculture, and again, there's just not enough technical people out there, technically trained people out there. We saw a little bit about the G by E interaction, and I did not talk with Paul about this beforehand, but today, besides that G by E interaction need, there's that interaction with the biotechnology trades, the various management practices. That can be everything from conservation tillage to no tillage to row spacing, twin rows, and corn production. And so that management is going to be a major portion there. And so the G by E by management, it's really good to see what Pioneer's doing with regard to a lot of their expansion of the management and training. And what are some of the new skills and research areas expected by the private sector? Well, there's been major changes in agriculture. If I look back, I was at a talk earlier this week where four people were talking to the graduate students about job opportunities and careers in agriculture, and one of the individuals raised up a slide rule. And about five people out of that audience, 200, knew what that was. And, you know, that's what I worked with. And now we have the computers and all the other things that we've been working with in the past. Besides the iPads, people have all their information, data analysis, access information on that iPad. And many of the growers are now wanting their data in Facebook so they can get that timely information. We've got the mobile phones that give you that information also. More research-driven, and again, this goes back to some of the things the Pioneer are doing with regard to their impact and also their ATMs, their agronomy trial managers. And again, as Paul mentioned, they're expanding that process here this coming. And again, if any of you have that idea of what's going to be out there in agriculture, that new thing in the next 15 years, let me know. I'd like to invest in that so I can continue my investment retirement portfolio. But again, if you look back over your careers, my first computer after I got my first job was with the USDA, and that was a 64K computer. Man, that was great. I didn't have to have a typewriter, but things have changed so much in that last 30, 35 years. What are some of the new skills that are going to be required by that MS, PhD level? And what I've done, we got major changes taking place in agriculture. That's the biotech traits, a whole range of things. And what I've done, I pulled information off of some of the job announcements that were in the Career Center and also on the ASA website. And again, people will be needed to have that training experience, again, not in a specific area a lot of times, because people are going to be changing jobs 8 to 10 times, even if they stay in the same company, but they will have a number of different jobs and positions in that company during their career. But they need to have that real strong understanding, that self-motivation, looking at writing grant proposals, strong leadership goals. This is from a research positions that were at universities. Extension positions, they were requesting that data delivery, again, communications, being able to evaluate that information for extension programs. From the industry standpoint, there were a number of things, a whole range from the biotech, from the plant breeding. Even though that agronomist is not doing that, they need to understand what those particular traits are and how to talk to that farmer or that producer about how these traits are being used. Plant pathology, entomology. I'm not sure how many of our agronomists are getting good experience in plant pathology and entomology. Ability to, self-motivated, there is another term that came up in a number of the items, but team interaction. If you're looking at a master's or specifically a PhD program, that is a very independent research study at the present time, is the way that's set up. And that team interaction at industry, that team interaction at universities now, working with a team on a grant proposal or grant project, that's an important part there. And I'm not sure if we're doing a good job in training our graduate students in that team type concept. And again, you can read some of the other things there that were listed in with regard to some of the job applications. I also believe that ability to multitask, working at Monsanto, you had many balls or up in the air, or if you're in a university situation, you got the teaching, research, extension. And one thing that we do not do a lot on is project management skills. And that is something that when that MS, PhD student comes out, they may have a good science background, but they really, that's only going to cover a small portion of their career. A lot of their career is going to be in their advancement, is going to be working with a team to be able to do a project management and interacting with people, getting people to do particular jobs, a lot of times without any benefit, but from advancement of a project within a company. Where do private agronomists obtain their information? Well, there's a whole range there. Companies have their own in-house training, and I'm sure Pioneer, Monsanto, Syngenta all have that, to talk about the new crops, the new traits, and the seed treatments, agronomic practices that they're working on. Company seed agronomists then train their seed dealers, retailers, the farmers out there on those particular traits. Company websites, Monsanto and Pioneer, I gave a couple examples there. We have a Monsanto rep there. They're very difficult to find, the agronomic stuff in your website. So it's tough to find something that could be worked on. University agronomic material, field guides, brochures, diagnostic guides. All the universities have their extension programs in the wintertime, during the summertime. One comment I would make about field guides and brochures with the advancements that are being done now with regard to iPads, information, that information, those bulletins need to be accessible to that particular, be able to download onto that iPad or that iPhone that they have. So that is something that I'll comment on universities need to do. One way that we're going to do some of the prepare for that next generation of agronomists is online programs and courses. Again, because that changing student out there, let's say, I'll use the term student, but they're really an employee. They're working full-time. They have a family responsibility. These are students that have come out with a BS in agronomy or some other area and want to advance their agronomy background. And at that time, they will have a better idea of what they want to do with regard to advancement of their career, because they've been in the field for 2 to 3 plus years, and so they know what needs to be done. Many of these students have a lot better advanced technology understanding than what we do, so they can take that binder, that milk carton that Paul was talking about, and I know what you're talking about, I had it in my pickup also, and put that on that iPad to get that information and be able to download that. Okay, the next few slides, I'm going to talk about a program that we have at Iowa State University. This is my promotional thing. We've had Pioneer and Purdue talk about various programs. I'm going to talk about our MS in Agronomy program. This program, we're in our 14th year now. This is a distance program in agronomy that's totally online. This is our website if you can go to. We have a lot more things on the MS Agronomy side. We have just started an MS in Plant Breeding distance program that got started this fall. To give you a little bit of idea about the courses in the program, we have a crop physiology course, three soils courses, a climatology course. I teach an integrated pest management. We have and also a crop production crop protection course, where we cover insects, diseases, and weed management. We have a couple of agronomy courses, three agronomy courses, and then we have a couple of courses that tie everything together at the end, current issues in agronomy and agronomic system analysis. We have an on-campus workshop for 1 week in the summer where students are required to come into the program or onto campus for this 1 week and get acquainted with Iowa State, get acquainted with Iowa agriculture. And then it is a creative non-thesis program, and the students do write a creative component. There was some discussion from George with regard to getting industry and people involved in the training. You can see we have some industry people. Dan Doble works for Pioneer, and he teaches our beginning soils course, and he teaches that from Alabama right now. Arden Campbell, retired from Iowa State, he teaches that course from Wisconsin. Down a little farther, Brian, teaching crop management and ecology. He works for BASF, and he's in California. So, and then myself, I live in Des Moines, and I teach, like I said, the integrated pest management and crop protection. So this is all done online, no matter where you're located. To give you an idea about the distribution, students in that program or in our program, right now we have 158 active students. As you see there, 44 are coming out of Iowa, but we have a good representation from the surrounding states, and we have six in Hawaii. And those are students that are working with seed companies over there, Syngenta, BASF, Pioneer, Monsanto. As I said there, we have 158 active students in our program right now. We've had 86 graduates. Again, the major portion of our graduates have come out of Iowa. But you can see that we have graduates scattered across the country. We have several from Canada. We have one that finished up from America, Samoa. Here's some of the occupations that our current students in our distance program are in. About 47% are in the seed industry. Pioneer Monsanto represents a large portion there, but we also have regional seed companies. We have Syngenta, also having students in the program. And again, these are not all agronomists. They're not all plant breeders. Some are ag business people that are coming in and wanting to do more from the standpoint of learning more about agronomy to help them in their career. We have some government people. This is the NRCES and county extension agronomists that are in the program to advance from their BS level to getting that master's degree. We have in the other category, which is about 13-14% there, those we have some people that are in the service. We have a lady that works in the Pentagon right now. We have a Air Force pilot that is in stationed in Oklahoma that is currently on a 9-month appointment in South America. And again, this allows them the opportunity to be taking our program, our courses, all on the internet, and then be able to advance themselves. What kind of collaboration do we need with the universities, the future agronomists? I think this is one area, the online teaching, the online program, is one area where Iowa State is developing their MS in agronomy distance program. I do not feel, and this may go against many people out here, that not all universities need to develop an online distance program. What we do need is universities interacting to assist in the development of specific courses for their areas, providing faculty to teach these online courses. I don't know if that's going to be from a standpoint of a regional programs or from the standpoint of problems. I know there's problems with the credits and compensation and all those other issues going across universities, but I don't feel we need to have every university having an online program. Graduate assistantships slash jobs. Many of our students, well, in fact, basically all of our students have are working full-time in our MS agronomy program and working on getting their degree program through our system. And so it provides the companies an opportunity to look at a new employee, a BS-level agronomist or BS-level person in a botany or in the greenhouse, for 2 to 3, 4 years to see how well they're performing and then determine if they want to go ahead and have that student go and get a master's degree in agronomy. So it gives the company an opportunity to look at that person and then also provides the company with an opportunity to support that student while they're working and having that student have their family life and can be located any place in the U.S. basically or world to be able to go through this program. However, there is always going to be a need to have that agronomist in the future and to do that research programs, develop that master's, the PhD, the research, because there's going to be those jobs in industry, in university education, research, extension, USDA, that's going to need those U.S. and need that PhD position. So that's going to continue to be there, and I haven't really discussed that part of the program at all. So some of the questions I did not answer, what are the need for MS and PhD students in the future? We know there's going to be a continued need. Again, we've had some discussion already about where farmers are going to get their information. Great opportunities in agronomy, and you see some of the companies there, and the training of the graduate students in the future. Where is that going to be coming from? Is that going to be coming more from online programs? But we still need to have that direct research component in there that on-campus master's and PhD offers. The one thing that an online program does, it allows me as an instructor to do that anywhere in the U.S. So this is a sunset from Florida in the wintertime. Any questions? Well, I think I went over my time, so I'll let Vern.
Thanks, Alan. We're scheduled for our next break here. We have about 10 minutes before we resume. Are there any questions for any of the speakers in this last session here on extension and education? Yes.
Question, and one of the question was how do we fully recognize the and reward the extension for the amount of information that goes to the grower that might be funneled or conduited through industry. Well, one of the ways is to continue to encourage our people as we have to give credit, and we really have worked hard on that. That's one of the reasons that that we work to publish them. The survey that I gave, even though it's fairly dated now, that is a reference that can be cited for your administrators. Those first two surveys that I gave were published, and I know published material is often recognized in the university realm. So that would be one opportunity. I know that's been shared with administrators before. Otherwise, again, within our organization, within our company, we work hard to ask our people to make appropriate citations, and when we see that they're not, we remind people about that. Beyond that, I think in industry we have a bit of a tension here because we want to be seen as the source of information with our customers, and so that's why you see the Pioneer logo at the top of the material that we share there. But at the same time, we've been involved at times in as advocates for the extension information. There's times when we've been asked to speak to administrators, write letters, and if there's ways that we can do that more tangibly, we're open to that. So those are a few examples to think about that we've worked with.
I just want to add a few comments from our side of the thing. My perception over the years that I've been at Purdue is that the relationships with industry vary state to state between extension and industry. And in all the years I've been at Purdue, I have felt really fortunate that by and large, I mean, there may be exceptions, but by and large, we've had excellent relationships with most of the ag industry in our state. And Pioneer in particular, I mean, I know basically all the area agronomists, and we, I won't say we talk every day, but we talk several times a year. We do trainings for them. We do trainings with them. And I guess what I'm getting at is part of the response, I think, Paul, is I think you brought this up in your presentation or maybe comments from some of your people in your presentation, that if we aren't proactive on our side of the fence of getting to know the area agronomists, the account reps, et cetera, around the state, even maybe down to the sales rep level in some cases, if we aren't proactive in getting to know these people, then I think we're shorting ourselves a little bit. And then maybe I would selfishly or egotistically say, I would hope that if we're doing a good job ourselves in our respective positions in extension, if we're doing a good enough job ourselves in our state, I would hope our Pioneer friends and other industry friends would recognize that and would just naturally, I won't say promote us with your customers, but I think that leads to a lot easier kind of credit where they'll say, well, hey, you know, Sean Castile, Purdue says this, just as a natural course of the conversation with the customer. So, you know, that's what I would say from the university side of things.
Yoakum?
I'm sure that varies a lot state to state, too. In Indiana, we have a very effective clientele lobbying force. It's the what does PCARET stand for, George? I can't even think what the acronym stands for, but we have a very active clientele lobbying group in the state, and that Purdue, and I say Purdue meaning the administration particularly, ag administration really works hard at keeping their visibility out in the state, and they call on them regularly not only to help us in the state house, but to also help us at the federal level. And so, again, I think that varies a lot state to state, but at least my sense of the PCARET activity in Indiana is that it's terribly effective, and we are, I won't say we walk on water because nobody does, but we have a very good lobbying force out there in Indiana, but, that's all I can offer.
Yes. You want to?
Can you reiterate?
The question, as I understand it, is do we need to think of a different structure in terms of how we deliver extension? What's happened already within states is we've moved to sort of regional agronomists as opposed to an agent in every county. But do we now need to think about sort of regional in terms of multi-state collaboration among our specialists in the various fields? Is that correct?
Part of that is asking the question at the county level, and part of it's asking it at the campus level, and I certainly won't try to address the county level because that's not my experience, but you could argue at the university level, the structure has already been changing since the advent of the web, and so we are already sharing information beyond our state borders that we never could prior to about 1995, and folks sometimes point to my website, the Chattanooga Cafe, where basically all it is a place where I compile links to newsletters from all over the Midwest. And a pretty simple concept in that regard, and yet it's been a tremendously successful website, partly for the reasons the questions that you asked, that it's a website where growers from Nebraska to, frankly, the East Coast can go to and find information from their area because I'm posting links to an awful lot of university newsletters at that one site. And so you could argue, I say, to that limited degree, we are already thinking outside the box, as it were. The box has already changed since 1995 with the advent of the web. But, beyond that, I'll admit I'm just not foresightful enough to really think of how else can we stretch that box or how else can we step outside of it. And we've had some casual conversations with one or more of our neighboring states about this very possibility of either sharing a specialist or creating some kind of a regional. We do have, with Michigan State, we do share an irrigation specialist. It's not a faculty-level position, but it's a regional specialist that is actually housed out of one of the county offices up on the Michigan-Indiana line. And I won't say that he literally reports to both universities, but he certainly serves the irrigation information needs of both states. And so we have that as maybe a beginning of the model. I'm not sure I would say it's the most successful model to be looking at for a number of reasons, but I think to a certain degree we may be forced into it for the reasons that you indicated, that with shrinking budgets and perhaps not replacing us old graybeards as we retire, every single one of us, we may be forced into thinking that way or coming up with these models. But again, I would argue that we're doing a lot of it now with the use of the web.
I'll just make one comment that what you described is closer to the industry models in some ways. That, for example, plant pathology was mentioned. We don't have the same concentration of plant pathologists state by state or entomologists state by state or soil scientists state by state as universities do. But there's a lot of people on the ground that are really strong agronomists. And those plant pathologists that might be in Johnson, for example, they depend really heavily on a lot of communication with really good people on the ground that really see a lot of things and really touch a lot of things. And so the concern I would have of going to that model is that it could work, but if you don't have people on the ground that are really on top of things, that are really communicating frequently with those fewer specialists, then you have the potential to lose touch, and that's the balance, and that's one role that industry might be able to play, is to help. Because I know our people really like the ability to pick up the phone and call their industry pathologist, but also to get another opinion at times from the university extension person in that same area.
There are a number of other questions that could be posed, but I think we need to move on. But one of the things I'd like to have our speakers think about is you both represent a major commodity area. What are the responsibilities that we have as scientists, as employers, to what I call the orphan crops? Those things that are important in specialty areas, but where we don't have a cadre of specialists to support. And how do we cover these to create diversity on the landscape? So think about that. We'll come back to it later.